Claire Dagnan is one of RTE's longest-serving executives, having joined the station after leaving college. She produced a number of groundbreaking programmes, including Women Today with Marion Finucane and the Women's Programme on Television, and went on to hold several senior positions in both radio and television. She was appointed Director of Programmes in RTE Television in 2003, before being named as Managing Director of RTE Radio in 2008. Last week, she shocked colleagues in the station by announcing that she will leave the job next month. Claire, you've described your departure as one of the hardest things I've ever done, so why go?
Well, yes, it was one of the hardest things, or is one of the hardest things I've ever done, because I have absolutely loved my career in RTE, particularly at the moment when you do a lot of reflection and looking back. I reflect on the fact that I have been a very lucky person in lots of ways, but in my career in particular. I suppose there were very few days when I woke up and I didn't look forward and anticipate going into work. It's just such an interesting and fascinating place to work. But in terms of why I'm leaving, it just feels like it's the right time. I'm not hanging up my boots from a professional point of view. I'm very interested in developing what the jargon describes as an encore career, which is where you leave maybe the main thing you've done for the bulk of your career and you explore other areas and other opportunities. And this just feels like a good time for me to do that. I feel that I can contribute to maybe a number of sectors or a number of areas. And I have a lot of interests. I have a lot of experience as a senior manager. I have a good knowledge of media. I'm not going to go through the CV now, but I feel there are interesting things that I could bring to different sectors and different roles. And I'm also keen to try new things. So the bottom line for me in all of this has to be that whatever I consider taking on, it has to be as interesting as I've found all those years in RTE.
Have you something specific in mind? Or
no,
you
not at all. People ask me that. I'm not going to anything. I'm actually going to take some time off initially to do a bit of thinking about what I might do next. I've gone back to studying in the last year. I'm studying to become a chartered director with the Institute of Directors because I think that's a good professional upskilling thing to take on. It's been very challenging, I have to say, to go back to the books for the first time since I did my exams in college many, many years ago. It's made me a lot more sympathetic to my own children when I was harassing them about getting on with their study. But no, I'm not going to anything specific. Let's see what comes along.
Can I bring you back then, many, many years, as you said yourself? Pretty much straight from college, you went into RTE. It must have been a very different place.
Yes, it was. And when I look back at how young I was when I went into RTE, I had barely turned 21. I look at what the kind of unformed person I was then and I think, gosh, it was a very brave person who hired me. I wouldn't have hired me at that time. It was a very insightful man called Paddy O'Neill. Sports fans have known him as Paddy O'Brien. He was a greyhound racing commentator, but also a very good producer and a manager in RTE Radio. And yes, it was a very different time, but I was fortunate, as were a number of colleagues of mine who also joined in that period, which was the sort of late 1970s. It so happened that a lot of people who had been with RTE for many years were coming up to retirement age, and management, and particularly Michael Littleton, who was the head of features and current affairs, was looking at the changes that were taking place in Irish society, the changes that were taking place in media, and also the changes that were taking place in radio. And he would have been the man who was responsible for bringing talk radio as we now know it, as modern radio consumers, to Irish listeners on RTE. And he recognised that with all the changes that were happening in Irish society at that time, and it was a time of great social turmoil across Europe as well and in the United States, that the people making programmes in RTE didn't necessarily reflect in their age or their interests or their sensibilities the kind of questioning of the established mores and values that was happening right across Western Europe. So he looked to recruit more women and he looked to recruit younger people. And that was very fortunate for a number of people, myself included, because we got an opportunity that I think maybe in a different time we wouldn't have had, to join RTE at a young age. And we were asked and selected, I suppose, not least because we were interested in the changes that were happening in society and because we questioned the way things had been done. Now, that's not to say that there was any leeway in terms of a relaxation around all of RTE's obligations to be balanced and objective and fair and so on. That was very, very much part of our training and part of the monitoring that we got. But nonetheless, we were loved for the fact that we challenged and said, why are we doing this type of programme? Why don't we do that type of programme?
And were women a rarity in the media and particularly in broadcasting in those days?
There were not very many of us, I have to say. Marion Finucane was a young cub reporter around that time. Marion Richardson was somebody who not long after I moved to radio had been looking to enter the media, and she and I worked on a young people's programme, which again was long before the days of RT Junior Radio. One of the things I did was a programme for children during the holidays, Christmas, Easter and summer holidays. Frieda McGough was there, very good journalist, very great interest in consumer affairs. But certainly on the radio side, no, women tended to be broadcasting in up the music end or the softer reporting up the softer features end, continuity announcers. Now, that's not to say there weren't some great women behind the scenes in all kinds of roles where they were very influential and where we all sat up and took notice when they quizzed us on administrative things or travel or a load of things like that. But they weren't really reflected or represented in the management, and very few of them were on air.
Now, Claire, you would have been behind Women Today and the women's programme on television. Was there a sense that you were breaking boundaries at that time?
Yes, I think very much with Women Today in particular. Again, it was a time that there were so many social issues that were of great concern to women in Irish society. There was no divorce in Ireland at that time. There was no availability of contraception at that time. There was an infamous employment case where a woman who was a teacher in County Wexford, Eileen Flynn, who was pregnant and was cohabiting with her partner, was dismissed from the school because it was felt her lifestyle didn't reflect the values and the mores of the school. There was a spate and into the early 1980s of babies being found, the Kerry babies case. So there were all of these things were happening, and quite a few of them were not finding their way into the news agenda of news and current affairs programmes in RTE at that time. And Gemma Hussey, who was then a senator, wrote an article in a somewhat academic publication called Irish Broadcasting Review, in which she asked, why were these topics not making it onto the mainstream news agenda? And she answered her own question by saying, because they never would, as long as the mainstream news agenda was basically dominated by mainstream news values, which were set and determined by men, men in public life, men in politics, men in broadcasting. And she put it up to RTE to find a way to bring these issues that were really of concern to women into the radio and television agenda. So Michael Littleton, who is the head of features and current affairs, put out a call that he was looking for proposals for a daily women's programme. And myself, and I'm sure a number of other people as well, threw our pitches in, and I was asked to set up the programme, which we ended up calling Women Today. And it is now looked upon as being groundbreaking. And I think even at the time it was, because of the topics and the issues that we covered, which just hadn't been covered on radio before. From the minute to the very significant, you know, from quite small things about how women reared their daughters or inheritance on farms, which actually was a very big thing in the agricultural community at the time. Farmers who had daughters who really wanted to farm and sons who didn't want to farm would still opt to leave the land to the son. The daughter was forced to go off to agricultural college and then leave the industry altogether or find work in some other sector. And then the very, very big issues as well, of the legal issues and the inequality issues and equal pay and all of those. So they were covered on a daily basis on the programme. Very fortunate in the team that I had working with me. Marion Finucane was the presenter of the programme, and Dearne Vrian was a reporter, and Patrick Farley, Betty Purcell, a number of really excellent people in their fields. And we were just lucky we hit the ground on the day that RT2FM was launched. We also launched in June 1979. But the programme was an almost immediate success, but it garnered a lot of criticism and a lot of media commentary. And one of the things that I learned from how that was handled as regards us as a production team was that our management and Michael in particular really shielded us from that. So he did a lot of the battle on our behalf in terms of responding to the criticisms. Once he was happy that we were making a good programme and a professional programme and a programme that was what it was intended to do, he felt his job as a manager was to protect us from any kind of external pressure or even internal pressure. I never knew at the time, but there were at senior level in RTE and on the RTE authority at that time, there were people who were very unhappy with the programme and with the sort of issues that it covered. Indeed, I have to say my own father, Lord rest him, at my wedding, which was in 1980, made it part of his father of the bride speech to make it very clear that whatever that people might have heard in the radio programme that they thought were my views, I hadn't learned them from him or hadn't learned them at home. So he felt that was important, but that would have been typical maybe of a lot of men of his age at that time.
Not the opinion of the management. Yeah. But I mean, just for people then who don't remember, where would that criticism have come from? You say internally and externally. Would it have been on the basis that you were pushing a very liberal, different agenda?
partly that. It's hard to remember now in a way what the specifics of it were. A lot of it was to do with things like these are not topics that are suitable for broadcasting on daytime radio, or they're not suitable for public discussion. I remember we did a programme on sexual problems that women had, the kind of problems they had, you know, women who just didn't enjoy sex or who were in a relationship or married to them. Most people in those days were married rather than cohabiting, so married to somebody who had lost interest in sex, or any number of things like that, where they could go, what help was available to them. Women contacting the programme saying they'd had six children, they didn't want any more, they had no access to contraception. What did they do? They loved their husband, but they didn't want to tell their husband to move into a separate room, etc. All those kinds of discussions on topics and issues. Now, it wasn't all about sex, but they would have been the sort of ones that attracted particular disapproval. I do recall a priest who was a lecturer in Maynooth describing in an article that he wrote in a Catholic publication, he was talking about that particular programme, and he referenced that Marion Finucan was the flea in the marital bed of Ireland. And that was his description of her. So it was that kind of criticism. We never saw it as our job to push a liberal agenda. I mean, we were careful on any issues that were contentious or were going to be subject to legislative review or whatever, to have a range of views. And there were never issues that arose around the programme being imbalanced in any statutory way. But a lot of people just felt these issues were best left unsaid. We were challenging Catholic values in the country or family values by discussing being gay, for example. And again, another item that would have featured on the programme, which had never been discussed, as far as I know, on radio before.
But when you see the issues that are galvanising the country today, since the Civita case, there's no specific women's programme on RT anymore. BBC kept its women's hour. Do you think that there is sufficient forum to air women's voices on radio?
It's a really good question. I think there are two aspects to it. I think a lot of the issues which are of interest and relevance to women and to men nowadays as well, because, I mean, even just the difference in how Irish citizens, male and female, feel about a lot of those issues and the level of engagement amongst men as well as amongst women. I think a lot of those issues are now part of the mainstream news and current affairs agenda. There was a long period when I thought they weren't, and I regretted the fact that RTE chose eventually to end the Women Today radio programme, although it evolved into Liveline, because Women Today was one of the first programmes that used the phone on a regular basis to put listeners on air. That was another actually significant thing about the programme. When you think back on it now, it's such a common model across radio, not just in Ireland, but around the world. But it was relatively new at that time. So I think the issues that are on women's agendas in general do get covered in the media, not least because there are many, many more women now in production and editorial roles and broadcasting roles across media. That said, there is a separate issue around the representation of women on air. And I think if you listen and watch across radio and television programmes, this is an issue that still needs a lot more work, which is one of the reasons why I know you had Caroline Erskine on with you last week, that RTE, in association with Caroline's Association Women on Air, on Wednesday of this week, we had a training day for women experts, in which we brought in 25 women who are very experienced and have a lot of knowledge in sectors and areas where women are underrepresented on air. And we hope we've skilled them up and given them confidence so that in future, if they get asked to participate or contribute to programmes, that they will feel that radio and TV have been demystified a bit for them and they'll be confident in going in and contributing.
In relation to television, Claire, I know you produce some of the biggest programmes in RTE, but you're also in charge of the independent broadcasting unit. What are you proudest of from that period of your work?
Well, up to the early 1990s, there was no requirement from RTE to commission programmes from the independent sector. And quite honestly, there was very little interest in RTE in doing so either, even though there were a number of independent production companies in Ireland who were looking to get commissions. And there were good, credible arguments as to why a broadcaster should look to source programming ideas from the widest possible talent base. Then the legislation changed and RTE was required to put aside a particular amount of money every year from the licence fee and spend that money at commissioning programmes from the independent sector. And I ended up being the person who set up the unit that started doing that, and I was fortunate enough to be there through a period of growth, because the ultimate requirement of the legislation was to get to 12.5% of licence fee income to be spent on independent productions. So that was quite a steep, significant growth period. And it was a very exciting time, because there were very few independent producers in Ireland initially when we started having to do this. And there was a lot of resistance in RTE to these programmes coming in from independent producers. But the sector grew and flourished and attracted a lot of really talented people. And by the time we got to the 12.5%, some of the biggest and most successful programmes on the RTÉ schedules were being made by independent producers. And that has continued to be the pattern. And I think nowadays for viewers, it's irrelevant to them whether a programme is made by RTÉ in-house or an independent producer or TV3 in-house or a TV3 independent producer. And likewise for, you know, most of the production staff in RTÉ, many of them at this stage might have started out their careers working with independent companies. Many of the senior managers in editorial roles in RTÉ were initially successful independent producers. So there is a normality now about the fact that people can move across the sector. It also offers more job opportunities. But the main thing is that it has created jobs and employment in the independent sector. It has helped to grow the Irish film industry off the back of the television sector and the skills that people learned there. And it has undoubtedly enriched the RTÉ television schedules as well.
You returned to radio in 2008. Would that be your first love?
I started out in radio, and I think as a consumer, a media consumer, yes. I just love the intimacy of radio. I love the fact that I wake to radio in the morning and I go to sleep to radio at night, and I'm in the car and I'm accompanied by radio. So as a consumer, I love it. I did love the production side of television and the commissioning side, because there is something very glamorous and exciting about going down on the set of a drama like Amongst Women and, you know, meeting Tony Doyle and just seeing wonderful cast and crew and the whole size and scale of something like that, or a big entertainment show. And I was directly involved in commissioning some really terrific programmes during my time in independent productions. But as a consumer, radio is the medium for me. I absolutely love it. And to my mind, despite all the growth in new media and new technology and everything else, nothing has come along so far to replace that real sense of involvement that you get from a terrific radio programme. I vividly remember driving to Sandymount once to a meeting and listening to Liveline. It was about 2:40, and it was at the height of the period of people revealing what had happened to them in institutional care in this country. And a woman was talking to Joe Duffy about what she had experienced and the impact it had had on her as a mother, as a wife, and as her ability to love and engage with her family into adult life. And it was riveting. And I sat in my car for 10 minutes and the tears were streaming down my face. Then he finished the interview and I leapt out of my car. And as I leapt out of my car, about five other people around me in parked cars also got out. And I said to one of them, "Were you listening to Joe Duffy?" And she just said, "I can't talk about it." And she turned and walked away. And I think that's incredibly powerful. And I don't know any other medium that can have that effect on a listener or a viewer or a reader or a user.
But it has been an eventful 4 years. What were the highs and lows?
Of the last 4 years, amongst the highs would have been recent international acknowledgement for what we do in RTÉ Radio, because of RTÉ Radio being designated Broadcaster of the Year 2 years in a row at the New York Festival, which is one of the top radio festivals in the world and a huge compliment to what we do. And stitched into that, I suppose, is one of those combined highs and lows, which is because of the economic downturn and the reduction in license fee funding and all of the challenges that RTÉ has faced since 2008. We're a much smaller organisation and we have much fewer people working in radio, for example, and we have much less money than we had back in 2008. So I am just hugely proud of the fact that our staff are so committed to protecting our schedules across our four FM stations and our digital stations, and that the kind of recognition that we're getting at the New York Festival, but also from the support of our listeners and our listenership figures, that is happening at a time when we know how tight we are on resources and how much fewer people there are working and the empty desks that there are in the radio centre compared to when I first moved over in 2009. I absolutely believe in public service broadcasting, and I see it every day in the commitment of the people that I work with. And Irish listeners deserve to be well served like that, but it's good to know that they are. I suppose in terms of lows, really the death of Gerry Ryan was just one of the most shocking and awful things that happened in my 4 years in radio. And I say this, you know, in full recognition that this was a man who was a husband and a partner and a father and a family man and a brother and much loved by all his family. And while I admired him, I wouldn't ever have called him a close friend, but I liked him hugely and knew him quite well. And that was just, you know, a really terrible time. During that same period, I suppose I ended up because I would have some expertise, I suppose, in strategic communications. I ended up working quite closely with RTE's Director General around the whole handling of the Father Kevin Reynolds case and the real difficulties that RTE went through when we made the mistakes that we made in the production of that programme. And that would have been a very difficult time as well, when you saw the avalanche of criticism that there was, and when you knew that much of it was correct and much of it was self-inflicted, and you love an organisation and you know that what happened was wrong but is not typical at all of how most people in the place work. That was very difficult as well, and very long and sustained. We've well moved on from that. We've learned a lot of lessons since that time, and it's been a lot of change. I know the Director General talked to you about last week, changes in how we do our business, changes in people leading news and current affairs. But that was a very difficult time as well, and one that I really regret that RTE had to go through.
Just to come back to the loss of Gerry Ryan, when Noel Curran was in with us last week, he referred to that and said, really, in hindsight, there was no plan B. Not that you could possibly have anticipated what happened, but that Gerry Ryan was such a huge powerhouse in 2FM that there was no alternative, there was no thought given to how he would ever be replaced. And 2FM has more or less lost its way, arguably, since then.
Well, 2FM had really lost its way before that. If you look at the listenership figures on 2FM, they had been declining consistently since 2004. I think the fact that the economy was so buoyant and commercial revenue was so strong maybe led to a complacency that there wasn't enough attention given to the fact that its listenership was declining. So as we got to 08, 09, that decline in listenership was accelerating. Then along came the economic downturn, and for advertisers who were being considerably more careful about where they chose to spend the money of their marketing budgets, they were moving away then from 2FM because they were looking at a decline in listenership. I arrived in 2009, and myself and the outgoing head of 2FM, John McMahon, spent a considerable period working on how to refocus 2FM and reposition it. But we did do it built around the success of Gerry Ryan, because he was sitting from 9 to 12 with this enormous audience, which was reducing, but we very much believed that we could turn it around again. And we were positioning the station around the type of listener he had and the kind of engagement he had with those listeners. So yeah, Noel is right. I just never, ever anticipated that you'd get the kind of phone call I got that day to say that he had died. So no, there wasn't a plan B, and it has been very challenging and very difficult to try and stabilise those audience losses. I think we have done that. We've a new head of 2FM, Dan Healy, who's joining us on the 4th of June. There's been a positive response from the advertising industry to that appointment, because Dan is a very skilled and very adroit person in terms of his understanding of growing audiences and growing listeners. And he's described 2FM as a sleeping giant, and I think he intends to wake it up. There's a wonderful legacy in 2FM of engagement with younger listeners. It won't be my decision, because I'll be gone from the 14th of June. But to me, 2FM is an enormous priority for RTE and has to continue to be. We are a public service broadcaster which has a requirement to serve the population right across its age span. And 2FM, even though it has been losing listeners, is the service on RTE that has the biggest engagement with 15 to 34 year olds and 20 to 44 year olds. And we have to build on that, not walk away from that. We need to encourage those listeners to listen to radio, to love radio as a medium, to feel an ownership with the station, to reflect back their interests and their values and their taste in music and sport and a range of other areas. Comedy is something we're very keen to bring back to 2FM. So if I were still there, I would be very much sticking with it and very confident that the only way to go is up.
And something like 57% of the audience share is with local radio, independent radio. What do you see as their strengths, and how do you import them into the national broadcaster?
Well, I think they're two different sectors. I mean, the great strength of local radio is its intimate relationship with its listeners, its physical presence on the ground, the fact that it can actually engage in content about topics and with people, many of whom will be known personally and experienced on a personal level by the listeners in the community in which they serve. I think it's a really important medium in the Irish media landscape, and I celebrate its success, and long may it continue. National media is different, and the national media services are different, and we can't compete on that level. So we're never going to be able to deal with the minutiae of the agendas and the stories that a local radio station can. But what we're talking about much more in national radio is the national conversation, is the sense of the nation coming together in the one place to celebrate or express express concerns or express anger or change an agenda or to simply enjoy a mix of music and services and content. If you look at it across radio, television and digital, that a national broadcaster can offer to people on a scale that it's not possible for a smaller local radio station to offer. But there's room for both. I think the most important thing for all of us in Ireland is to value and work to preserve our own Indigenous media, be it broadcasting or print, be it national or local. There's been such a change in the media landscape in this country in the last 10 years. And we're a small country. There's a finite amount of advertising revenue available for media in this country. And realistically, there's a finite amount of public money available to support public service media. And there is a huge amount of commercial income exiting out of this country every week to broadcasting services and media outlets that put nothing back, that don't produce in this country, that don't offer content that's relevant to Irish people. And I think if we're not careful, we may rue the day that we stood back and continued to allow that to happen without also taking steps to protect our own Indigenous Irish media. And I feel it's not just RTE, but I would say that across media in general, if we don't have strong Irish media with strong Irish content, we'll rue the day when it's gone.
Niamh said to me earlier, since you made the decision to go, you've been doing some reflecting. So on reflection, looking back, what are you proudest of over those years?
I think Women Today as a radio programme, although it's such a long time ago now, and sometimes I feel like, you know, people think I'm this one-trick pony. I came up with this programme idea and produced it for 1 year and then I moved to television as a television producer. But it would certainly, from the point of view of being a groundbreaker or a game changer, not just for me, but I think also certainly for radio and television broadcasting in terms of opening up a new area of interest and a new agenda. Women Today, I think I was fortunate to be in the right place with independent television productions when RTE began to really commission in a serious way and the industry began to take off. And I've had some lovely comments and compliments from people in the sector when they heard my news to say that I'd given them their first chance, or, you know, I should never have recommissioned them after the first thing they did for us, but that I did, and, you know, that they were able to build on that success. Some of the great programmes during my time as director of programmes in television, again, where I was lucky through that period, it was a period of growth and commercial income was very strong from 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The schedules were very rich, and it was being fortunate enough to be involved in commissioning in television, both in-house and from the independent sector, at a time when there was money to say yes to some really cracking ideas, things, series like, you know, Seán Amorga's seminal series Seven Ages, or the wonderful series on Charlie Haughey, Bachelor's Walk, the comedy series on Home Ground, the, you know, a number of great dramas and really good lifestyle programmes as well, at a time when people were just hugely interested in watching programmes about their leisure and their Celtic Tiger programmes in one sense, I suppose, programmes about fashion and houses and interior design. They were very successful and they were Irish and people wanted to watch them and they wanted their own homegrown versions of those. So they were all very good times. And then, as I said, the successes for RTE Radio, despite the challenges that we're currently facing and the way in which RTE Radio staff right across the business have addressed having to do much more for much less and how they continue to serve listeners every day.
And finally, Claire, a lot of people would have had money on you to be the first female director general. Was that not a tempting prospect?
Gosh, there's an interesting question. I look forward very much to the day when there will be a woman director general, and I'm pretty certain that in my lifetime that there will be. But we've a crackingly good director general at the moment, Noel Curran, and I've absolutely no issues with his skills. He's the man to lead the organisation in the challenging times that we're in at the moment. Things need to fall at the right time, the right place. And for me, this is the right time to move on and to dip my toe in other waters.